Well, good evening, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. If you're visiting with us tonight, we are studying together, and we're the past few weeks on Wednesday nights, we've been going through what we're calling the Way of the Righteous Summer Series, but we just named it that just because it's a series of lessons from some key individuals from the Bible, and we're looking at their lives and study together to learn about God's people, to learn from their life that they lived, the struggles that they had, the examples that we can find through their words and their deeds. And the struggles that they had and the pitfalls sometimes that they had, but how they remained faithful and how they demonstrated their faith, that's what we want to take away from that study, as well as learning ourselves as God's people, things that we should be on the lookout for, and things that we should be avoiding. And as I can see from the slide, we are going to study Solomon tonight. So, that requires going back in time, both to the time of Solomon, as well as a few weeks ago when we've studied and read back in, I think, middle of May, 1 Kings, and some of the text that is also on the docket tonight. So Solomon. So hopefully we're going to explore his rise as into wisdom. We'll talk a little about the temple and the building of it, the golden age of Israel, if you will. It's really the high point for the nation of Israel. And then we'll address, if we have time, into the decline, and look at throughout all of God's steadfast faithfulness throughout all of it as an example to us as we look at our own lives and try to find the lessons and the parallels to the lesson tonight. But abiding in God's promises and looking out for the dangers of drifting away is something I think we can take away from our study of Solomon tonight and walk away with that. So this is the text that I sent out in advance to go through. There's a lot more about Solomon and his life than what we're going to cover tonight. It's too much to cover. But we'll look at some text in 1 Kings, the first 11 chapters, as well as some parallel text in 2 Chronicles, the first 9 chapters. And then we'll look at Deuteronomy 17, just some key verses there, which provide the guidelines for the king and those boundaries for power that are so important that all of the kings of Israel knew about, including Solomon. And it was pretty clear that he was aware of those guidelines in Deuteronomy and lived by them for a while, but it's likely that it's clear that he did stray from those guidelines, and that's where things kind of went off the rails. And then if we have time, I called it bonus. It's not bonus. It's more than that, but obviously, it's way more than that. Psalm 72, which is a good place to go to understand what God is when he's talking about a king. That's what he's talking about. That's who he's talking about. It's that ideal king in Psalm 72. And then, of course, Ecclesiastes, the first two chapters in 12, is I attribute it to Solomon, end of life, or someone writing as Solomon. But it's a reflection back on to his life and the wisdom that he gained from having a life of that he lived and lessons that he learned throughout his life and reflection on it and guidance and wisdom for us. is what that really is. All right. So where are we in the Bible here in the timeline? I don't know if you can see it. It's a copy of a copy, and I tribute to Farrell Jenkins. If you're not familiar with Farrell Jenkins' work, I commend you to it as an aid to study aids. He's very good at what he does, putting together helpful aids, and this is what this is. And it shows, it starts at the top, it's kind of a snake chart. It starts at the top with the creation, the flood, the wandering in the wilderness, the giving of the law, goes through entering the Canaan, sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied, the period where there's judges, and then of course, you've got the beginning of the United Kingdom period, where you have King Saul, then King David, and then King Solomon. And from there, things go off the rails after the end of Solomon's 40-year reign. You have the divided kingdom with Rehoboam leading Judah and Jeroboam in the northern kingdom. But who was Solomon? So we already established, obviously, he was a king over Israel. But when I say King Solomon, from your readings and your study and what you know, what are some of the things that come to mind? You shout them out. It's okay. What's that? Yep, son of David. That's a good one. What else? Wisdom. Yeah, very good. Very true. What else? Riches. Yep, he definitely was. Lots of wives and concubines. Lot. The temple. That's right. He's responsible for a extremely important construction project. So he was really good at that. And he built his palace too. Another construction project that was pretty impressive. Come on. More stuff. Think a little deeper. I don't know if he introduced it. He struggled with it. Yep. That's for sure. What else? Yeah, that's a good one. I appreciate that. As many folks have complicated backgrounds or families, that you can have that background and still go on to live and live for the Lord. What else? Yeah. Yep. Bathsheba, very important. We're going to talk about that. You guys said most of these. Foreign wives, building projects, wisdom, Jerusalem. Nobody said Jerusalem. And division of the kingdom. So when you're thinking about Solomon, he has a story arc. There's a lot of high points and there's some low points in his life. He was a king. That was a high point. It was part of God's will that he would become king. We read about the difficult beginnings of that, but God's will was done towards the end of David's life. He had wisdom. We're going to talk about that, about the wisdom was granted and given to him by God. Obviously, the high points with the temple. Several times there was covenants made by God to him or relayed to him. There's some low points with regard to, obviously, marrying foreigners. We'll talk more about that. There's a low point there. I didn't create this diagram. I thought it was just interesting with the palace. Not something necessarily that designed to bring glory to God. So I think he could have been in. And he struggled with a lot of things throughout his life. once he started to stray, kind of listed out and as indicated by the right side of that chart there. But if we don't get through it all today, I always put this up front as one of the key takeaways that you can leave here with. God gives Solomon wisdom and peace, but divided loyalties erode his faith. Yet God's covenant faithfulness endures and points forward to Christ. So, some of the questions I sent out at the beginning, a couple of questions dealt with the early beginnings of Solomon and what the influences that he had on his life. So, who are some of your spiritual mentors, and what did they teach you? Because you're all here tonight, you likely were influenced by someone in your life, influenced you, and helped show you the way, unless you stumbled upon it all by yourself. Yeah. Your parents, yeah. Yeah, and I appreciate that because that is one of the primary roles of our parents, if they do love the Lord, is to bring their children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Who else? I just don't want to say it. So who were Solomon's mentors? What's that? Nathan. Yeah. Who else? We'll talk. What's that? David. Yeah, no, that's a good one. Of course David was. Who else? I have a few more on the next slide. I'm not going to bring it up yet until you guys say it. I know you can. Yeah, his wife. Yeah, his mentors. You know, I didn't specify good mentors or bad mentors. They could be both. Positive influencers, negative influencers, because you could have negative mentors. So I listed a few up here. David, obviously David was a mentor of his. Bathsheba, how would Bathsheba, that queen, be necessarily be a mentor? Yeah, she's mom. She obviously had an influence. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and she did. She had a role in it, kind of the study. She was, in Hebrew is called Geburah, but she would have been responsible in the position that she was in as overseeing the palace. She had a position of authority and influence already, just by the nature of her position. But she was used in that way. To wield influence over the king's household and intercede for justice and other things. And she successfully pleads Solomon's favor toward Joab. So a good example of loyalty and wisdom there with Bathsheba. Nathan, we talked, Clayton mentioned Nathan. How is Nathan a mentor? And I classify him as a little bit more than a mentor. He's kind of like a the word is escaping me. But he was working in the background to influence and affect the outcome of Solomon, to ensure Solomon was taken care of. So it's more than just giving advice and guidance to someone. It's actively working on their behalf to ensure that they are taken care of and looked after. And so Nathan was doing that with regard to hearing. You know, he heard Bathsheba's concern that Adonijah is about to claim David's throne, and he devises a plan to ensure Solomon's anointing by going and talking to King David about it, interceding on his behalf. He was a key player in Solomon's life and success. I have Zadok the priest. So why would I put Zadok the priest down? Why would I put a priest down? Yeah, he anointed Solomon king. And so he was, obviously important there in providing guidance from his position as a priest, and looking after him that way. And the position of king for Solomon was more than just was designed to be, from God's design, not just a administrative function, right? He wasn't just to run the kingdom and be a good administrator. He was to be the king of God's people. And so exerting judgment, godly judgment, ensuring that people remained faithful to God, and the priesthood was part of God's plan, and so he had to be very, very close and closely tied to that priesthood. And Zadok was that link, that bridge between those two things. So, any other thoughts on that? So Solomon did have a broad swath of early mentors, folks that were looking after him, teaching him, ensuring that God's will was done through him. And so I only bring all that up because it's important for us to, one, ensure that we're seeking out godly mentors and guidance, because you need them throughout your life, and to ensure that we are endeavoring to be those mentors and guides to those that need them as well. Because it's so critical to our walk with God that we have them. And that we provide and we are that for others that are looking to grow in their walk with God. Amen. Especially new babes in Christ. So, getting into 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, if we turn there for chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, we see David's charge. And so this is where that trust is formed. And so we'll read it. Now that the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgment, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may fulfill his word which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed in their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. So what's David doing there? What's going on with that text? And why is that so important that he does that? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. What else? Why else is that important? Yeah, that's right. It's the basis of the promise. Because who is ultimately going to be on the throne? Who are we be talking about? Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're talking about Solomon. I'm thinking in terms of the larger, the true king. Yeah, yeah, it's not. I'm not trying to trick you, or advance a false doctrine by any stretch. So David gives that charge. It's pretty weighty. It's not the same charge I've given any of my children yet, for sure. But it's of vital importance, and it must have been. Solomon clearly understood what he was, what was getting placed on his shoulders here with that charge, and so, which is good. It leads right into the dream at Gibeon, in 1 Kings chapter 3 verses 5 through 15. Let's read that. Somebody wants to read chapter 3 verses 5 through 15. My voice is losing it. 5 through 15, chapter 3.
At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in his dream by night. And God said, "Ask what I shall give you." Solomon said, "You have shown great steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, in uprightness of heart towards you. You have kept for him great steadfast love, and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David my father, although I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of your people. You have chosen a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to trust your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people?" It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked him. God said to him, "Because you have asked this, and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. I give you also, when you have not, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. And give you a walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked.
Yeah. So what stands out to you from that text? I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot there, but what is Solomon, what stands out to you about Solomon's character and how he approaches God here? Yeah. Yeah. humility and gratitude. Dependence. Yep, dependence upon God. He calls himself a little child. And he recognizes his inability to rule wisely without God, apart from God. He calls himself a little child and he needs God so that he can be grown and rule as an adult. That's the only way he could do it. And so he's wholly and completely dependent upon God. And he makes a request. So what's his request here? An understanding heart. For what reason? Discern justice. What's that? To judge God's people. And so he knew the charge. He knew his job and what it was going to be because he was anointed. Now, he recognizes he's not equipped to do it and needs God to give him what he needs to be able to do the job that God has anointed him to do. And so, he's humble. He's wholly dependent upon God. He recognizes he lacks what is required, and he seeks it from God, and he has faith that God can provide that to him. And so the lesson for us then there is what? Pray for the same thing. That's right. That's right. We cannot do it alone. We must wholly and completely rely on God and approach Him in the same way with humility and acknowledgement that we are little children and that we need Him. So what does God then provide him? What is the answer from God here? Yeah. So he gave him wisdom and so much more along with it because of his heart and how he approached God. He was blessed beyond measure. There's blessings with humbly approaching God with a contrite heart, seeking and wholly relying upon Him. But you can't go to God hoping that contritely with the hope that you're going to get the blessings. That's not how it works. That's not what it's saying here. He only was blessed because of his humble, contrite heart and the way that he approached God. And the fact that that was his request, that in and of itself was a wise request. And so he was already wise in the way he approached God. That was a wise way to approach God and a wise request. So God blessed him that much more. So he begins to start to use his blessings. And we make our way into chapter 3. Verses 16 through 28, we all know the story. If anybody wants to recap it, we're running out of time. But it's the judgment of the infant. You've got two prostitutes who, just keep in mind that as King Solomon was the Supreme Court as well. He was the final authority on judging matters. And so there is a situation where two prostitutes each had a baby. One of the babies of the prostitutes died in the night. The other one went and stole the other prostitute's live baby and switched it with the dead baby. And then now there was a disagreement. Obviously, there were some problems there. It needed to be resolved. And what did Solomon's, what was his approach to addressing the dilemma of whose baby was whose? What's that? Yeah, he says, bring me a sword. He brings a sword and he says, all right, chop the baby in two, give each mother a half. And so, what did the real mother do when he said that? No, don't kill the baby, give it to the other mom. Because she would rather the baby go to the other mother than see it die. And the other mother is like, fine, if I can't have it, neither of us will. So it was clear at that point who the real mother was, and so the baby at that point was returned to the rightful mother. But this discernment and this the wisdom and the capability of Solomon was amazing to Israel and to the people that were beginning to see how truly amazing and capable Solomon was with the wisdom from above to make that discernment. True wisdom, godly wisdom, always glorifies God and serves others. And we see this throughout his life on into the dedication of the temple. And so we get into 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 20 through 25. There's a period of prosperity and peace in Israel. And so while King Solomon was obedient and ruling in accordance with God's principles and teachings, things were great and doing very well in Israel. It was the golden age of the nation. They had riches beyond measure. They had a blue water navy. They had other kingdoms from the surrounding lands would come and pay tribute. They were the envy of all around them. And we see in chapter 8, the temple's dedicated. Let's turn to chapter 8 and look at the temple dedication. Chapter 8, verses 27 through 30. But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain you. How much less this temple which I have built? You regard the prayer of your servant and his supplication. O Lord, my God, and listen to the cry and the prayer which your servant is praying before you today, that your eyes may open toward this temple, night and day, toward this place of which you said, my name shall be there, that you may hear the prayer which your servant makes toward this place. And may you hear the supplication of your servant and of your people Israel, when you pray toward this place, here in heaven, your dwelling place, and when you hear, forgive. And then on into 41 and 43. Moreover, concerning a foreigner who is not of your people, Israel, but has come from a far country for your name's sake, for you will hear of your great name and your strong hand and your outstretched arm when he comes and prays toward this temple here in heaven, your dwelling place, to do according to all which the foreigner calls to you, that all peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you, as do your people Israel, and that they may know that this temple which I have built is called your name. So what's the purpose of the temple here? What's the purpose of God's temple? Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't just about Israel. It was about all people to know the Lord and to know the one true God. And they understood that. And so what's the lesson for us here as God's people? What's that? The same purpose. Yeah. We are the temple of the Lord. The Spirit dwells in us. We are to draw others to us. We are to be a reflection. The world is to see us and to what? Yeah. All peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you. They all should know God and fear Him because of their interaction and knowing and seeing us as God's people. We're a reflection of Him. And the blessings that Solomon had and the kingdom of Israel had at the time, they were all meant to point nations to God. That's what they were meant to do. And the Queen of Sheba is one of them. So the Queen of Sheba, she, over in chapter 10, she wanted to test Solomon's wisdom, and she brings all kinds of gifts and precious stones and things to him. And all of those things foreshadowed the Messiah's wisdom. She marveled and was amazed because she heard about it, but she didn't believe it until she interacted with Solomon, and everything she heard was true and then some. And she was amazed because of it. But things didn't stay that way. And even before that, there's a period, the temple dedication. We're running out of time. We don't have a lot of time to go into it. But I encourage you to read and study in 1 Kings chapter 8, and then on into the beginning parts of chapter 9, when God appears to Solomon again, the second time. And what he promises to him. And it's a reminder that to continue to walk with him and to remain faithful. Because the blessings and the continued membership into the kingdom depends on his faithfulness. And so that's vitally important as we turn to his decline in chapter 11. And what was the biggest driver there in the beginning of chapter 11, verse 1? What's that? Those wives, the way she said it was amazing. Those wives. Yeah. Yeah. 700. One. How do you do that? And right? Like, how do you even manage that? 700 plus 300 concubines. Nobody, you're not even mentioning that. But what was the caution in Deuteronomy 17, 18 through 20, I think 20 or 24? Yeah, don't do that. There's three things caution in Deuteronomy for kings. Horses, what's that about? Well, that's about weapons and warfare and building up armies. That's what that's about. What was the other ones? Wives and gold. Riches. Don't accumulate riches and don't take a bunch of foreign wives, because why? What's that? They'll turn you away. And then a lot of work. But they'll turn you away. They'll turn you away from God. And so that's what happens. But King Solomon in verse 1, chapter 11, King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidians, and Hittites, all the Hittites and the Sidians, from the nations for whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. And there's many things in the Bible that says don't do this. But there's not an immediate explanation of what's going to happen when you do. This is one of those areas where it's don't do it because this is what's going to happen. And what happened? Exactly what was said. Israel went from the height, the pinnacle of success and an empire and communing with God. I mean, God dwelled in the temple so much they couldn't even do their work. He was there. Fire came down and consumed all the sacrifices. God was pleased with this and dwelt with them. In the temple that they built, which was magnificent, gold plated in every way. I mean, read the description about it. It's hard to wrap your head around what it looked like. But he messed it all up. And he did it. It was very clear. It's not like he did something he didn't. He like just kind of messed up. No, he started and turned away. And it's probably started a little bit here and there. And it made sense, you know, getting married to this to the Pharaoh's daughter, and have an alliance and build a treaty, and it'll be good for trade. And there's a lot of other reasons why you would do it over time. And it just seeps in and took him over. And what's the caution for us? It didn't take 300, 700 wives to turn you away. It just takes turning a little bit. Turning a little bit. He had everything. All the riches. Any indulgence you can imagine. Any pleasure you can imagine. He had everything given to him. Provided for him. And it never was enough. And he started to just turn away and slip. Yeah.
I know we're running out of time, but probably what you should get into it. We had to get into Ecclesiastes. When you think about it, though, what did God give? Now, after the period, I'm going to give you that discerning part that you asked for. I'm also going to give you riches. Yep. So, somebody that looks at it, no way later, he didn't see these riches. God gave it to
you. Yep.
Somewhere along the line, his mind shifted. His heart changed. Not only, but and it started with wisdom. And then it struck him with the God able to be a righteous judge, to be discerning, and to deliver of justice. He started seeking after him. He started trusting in his own wisdom.
Yeah.
And it seems that that's in Ecclesiastes, he's seeking after all these things, instead of just trusting in what the Lord has given, now.
Yeah.
And so you have that transition that happens within you. And it's amazing how you get to the end of the lesson that you learned, but you have to learn the hard way.
Yeah. That's a very good point. And as we conclude, I had 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 57 through 61 to end on, but I want to read as we depart the end of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. Verses 13 through 14, and we take this with us as we leave here. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Solomon's life, everything he had, all boils down to that.